Yeah. I want to look at some of the psukim and some of the commentary that Rav Sherman brings in the Stone Chumash. And so we were given the general mitzvah kedoshim tiyu, to be holy, and which we're told is to act in moderation and respectfully. And then HaKadosh Moshe Rabbeinu is given a litany or a list of mitzvos to talk about. So the first one is Ish Aviv Imo Aviv Tira'u. You should your father and mother you should revere. And the Rambam points out that this means one should act towards parents as if they were a sovereign, as if they were a monarch with the power to punish those who treat them disrespectfully. And we're told that in details, many of us know this, this is a notion that a child should not take a parent's regular spot where they sit, shouldn't interrupt, shouldn't directly contradict. Where we have the mitzvah of honor your kavedes avicha v'esimecha, this refers to taking care of one's parents, making sure their physical needs are taken care with, and where you have to assist them to do that. And then we have the famous juxtaposition in the same pasuk, the Eshab Soisai Tishmairu. Hashem says, you got to revere them, but you got to keep my Shabbos. And everybody tells us, what's this talking about? If your father says to you, you know what? This Shabbos stuff is bunk. I want you to put on the TV for me. I want you to put something in the microwave. You're not allowed to listen, because both your parents and you yourself are both mitzvah. You're commanded to do mitzvahs by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and the degree of reverence and respect you have for your parents does not allow you to sin, to go against the Torah. The other thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Klal Yisrael is that there should be a realization that there are three partners in the creation of a human being: the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, the mother, and the father. What says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, when I see someone properly honoring parents, it's as if they've given recognition to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. The question that's asked is, why Shabsoisai? Why plural? The Zohar says, this somehow is talking about a higher and a lower Shabbos. It's something Kabbalistic. Shabbos talks about the Kedusha, the holiness, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows his presence to be more palpable. We can feel it greater. We can feel a greater Kedusha. That's the higher level. The so-called lower level of Shabbos is the resting on Shabbos, when we can sit back and take a break, when we can turn away from everyday activities, when we can learn, when we can daven, when we can sing Zmiros. They tell us that Rav Tarfon in the Gemara said that if he would hear his mother's footsteps, he would say, "Ach, the divine presence is coming." He realized this realization of the three partners in creation, and he was able to basically turn his mind to it. The next pasuk says, "Do not turn to idols, molten gods you cannot make, because I am Hashem." HaKadosh Baruch Hu says once again, and we're told this many, many times, stay away from Avodah Zorah. This, we're told, is that we shouldn't even think about, let's explore Avodah Zorah. Let's see what it's about. The Ramban says, we're forbidden to study or to discuss the various rituals and the philosophy of the idolaters. And the Panim Yafo says, even if somebody says, I'm going to look at this so that I can basically dump on it, I can disparage it, he says no. Human nature indicates that many people initially thought they were strong enough to resist the urges of Avodah Zorah and would sort of want to think what's it about, and unfortunately they succumbed. We in our day and age cannot imagine serving sticks and stones, right? And rubbing two sticks together and expecting a shade to show up, etc. However, we're told that it's not because the previous generations were on a lower level than us. We're on a lower level. They at least, it says, were able to in some way fight against this inborn Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zorah. We are told, would not survive. We would succumb. You know, and it's an interesting thought that we would feel that, hold on, we're much more sophisticated. We have a greater body of knowledge and everything else, and yet, Chazal tell us, ignore your greater knowledge, etc., and realize that the earlier generations were so much greater, and Sanhedrin had to do away with the Avodah Zorah. They had to kill the Yetzer Hara for idolatry. The next notion, next mitzvah that we talk about is something called pigul. Every korban had a time limit. If you look at the mishnas before Vishmo Alomer in Shachris every day, Eizem Akaman Shal Zavachim, it gives you the time limits of each korban. So, for example, a shlomim, you would bring it one day. You could eat it that afternoon, that night, and the next day up till a certain point. Let's say up to some time before sunset. It's called two hours, 2 days and a night. And a kohen, for some, right? If a kohen said, okay, here's someone shlomim, and I'm going to have the kavana that it's going to be eaten on the second night outside of its limitations, or if the mitzvah was to eat it within the walls of Yerushalayim, or if with a higher level of kedusha within the confines of the Beis HaMikdash, the kohen's mere thought that these things wouldn't happen puts a blemish into the korban, and it's called pigul. If you eat pigul, you're chayif. It says, pigul hu lo yeratzeh, it's not accepted, and you will have to carry your sin. You somehow have disgrace, chilel, like chilul Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's holiest, v'nichrasa ha'nefesh ha'himei ameha. And think, look at this. The aveira for eating pigul is kares. A very, very serious aveira. And notwithstanding that, you know, that's what happens. And, you know, I think I remember some of the Gemaras saying, let's say a kohen deliberately made your korban pigul. Could you get money back? And it would seem the Gemara says that because the damage is not discernible, you can't see it, you may not be able to get restitution from the kohen. But we all know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right, is the great equalizer when it comes to compensation. Then we're told the mitzvah of the kohen might tell him. He could say, doesn't tell him? Then he has no, what you don't know, you can't be responsible for. Yeah, the kohen has done the kohen has definitely done an aveira. There's no question. The kohen has acted totally inappropriately. It doesn't tell us what his punishment is, but I'm just going to speculate that it shouldn't be any less than the person whose korban was now contaminated in the spiritual way. I mean, it's. Go ahead. Yeah. The other problem you can have with a korban is called noisar. Noisar is, we'll look at the korban Pesach. We know that the korban Pesach could only be eaten on the night of Pesach. If you, Tuchatzos, right. Right, Tuchatzos. And if you ate it later, that was an aveira. That's called noisar. That which is left over. So we're given a mitzvah, don't leave over. Now, then we're told, what do you do if in fact you left it over? It says, be'esh tisraifu. You've got to take whatever was left over and burn it on Chol HaMoed. But if you ate it, you get the same type of aveira. You can't eat a korban outside of the time limits. That's another isser that the Torah talks about. The Parsha then turns to what we call the Matnas Aniyim, the things which were left over for the poor people. People who grew things, which was the general occupation of most of the Jews at that time, if you had a field, you had certain requirements. If you grew grapes, there were certain undeveloped grapes and other sort of less than wholesome great grapes that you had to leave for the honey. That was one thing. Then there was something called leket, or shikha. That was that if you were harvesting your grain and you left two, I think at the halacha is if you left two grains that fell, two stalks of wheat together, you couldn't pick them up. You had to leave them. If three of them were there, you could pick them up. You had to leave that for the ani. The other mitzvah they had was peah. They had to leave a corner of each field for the aniyim. These were the three commandments that a farmer was required in terms of giving to the poor. Now, we know as well that there were other requirements for a farmer. One was that they had to give truma to the kohen. The truma to the kohen could be almost anything. It didn't have a number. But we're told that generally they try to give 2%. That was a rabbinic enactment, 2%. So then you had 98% left, and you had to give maaser to the levy, so you gave 9.8% of what's left to the levy. And then you had what we called maaser sheni or maaser ani. In the first year and the second year after Shemitah, you took maaser sheni. And what that was it was again, let's say there was 90% left. You took 9%, 10%, and 90, and you took that year to Yerushalayim. You were required to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it there with other Jews. The Torah mandated a system whereby Jews frequently had to be in Yerushalayim, had to frequently see the Pnei Hashem, the manifestation of Shekhinah. They had to be imbued with this holiness. In the third year, in the cycle, they then gave Maaser Ani. This 9% was given to poor people. Years 4 and 5, they went back to Maaser Sheni. And year 6, again, was Maaser Ani. The 7th year was Shemitah, when you couldn't harvest your land and everything was free to anyone. And that was the cycle. We also know that the people brought Bikurim. The first fruits were also brought to Yerushalayim, right? And were given to the Kohen. And so we had the agricultural society was very, very much a sharing society. One with, right, mandated gifts to the poor, to the Kohen, to the Levi, etc. Right? And this one says to us, right? The pasuk here says, don't take your undeveloped twigs. In other words, the things that aren't that great in your vineyard, the ones where you don't have prime grapes, don't take that. The fallen fruit that we talked about, you cannot gather. You have to leave these for the poor, and it says also for a ger. It seems that the Gerim in those days were also, I would imagine they didn't inherit any land because they didn't come from the 12 Shvatim, and there had to be a way to help sustain them. And then the pasuk ends. It says, you know, you do it. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am God, your God. Well, isn't that obvious? Like, what do we need this here in this pasuk? And we're told that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is reminding people, dealing with human nature, that don't take shortcuts. Don't try to be too smart, and don't try to find loopholes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows exactly what's happening. And if you have that perspective, right, you do exactly what's proper. Now, I was thinking, and I don't have a good answer for this, if I had 200, you know, rows of grain, how the heck would I know what 2% is, what 10% is, etc.? They obviously had a way of doing it, but if you think about it, like, how do you measure this type of stuff? And I haven't actually seen anything that tells us how it pragmatically happened. It would be an interesting thing to find out. You need a good counter, not an accountant. Accountants can't count. Nah, I did that for a living. I wasn't good at counting. I would transpose numbers. Didn't work. I mean, think about it. I'm a farmer, right? I don't have a calculator. You know, I probably don't have tremendous scales. I mean, how did I do it? Anyway. I leave that question open. It's probably worth a PhD study by somebody. I don't know if anybody's ever done it, let's say, you know, at YU or whoever. Then we get a general admonition. Don't steal, do not deny falsely, and don't lie to one to another. Don't swear falsely in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name, thereby causing a chilul Hashem, the desecration of again Hashem. And again, we get that ani Hashem, I am God. I know exactly what's happening. It says, Rav Hirsch said, stealing, robbery, and false oaths are never the norm in an entire nation. If they were, society would totally break down. But he says there are even some things that are more subtle. He says there's an attempt or a reality that people can be lax in applying ethics. We can look for loopholes. We can attempt to deny obligations that can't be proven. And there are even people who will say, I swear by God alone that this is what the truth is, right? And he says, there are those who unfortunately underpay their laborers, right? Or they flatter people, butter them up to let them down. And he says, such conduct is wrong. And he says, again, we know the courts cannot regulate proper behavior. Can't happen. The courts cannot regulate everything that's done between Adam l'Chaveroi, between people. And it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in mentioning Ani Hashem, and implies that he expects Klal Yisroel to be meticulous in standards of honesty and being upright. And he says, even if you don't steal directly, but you're an indirect co-conspirator, so to speak. You know, the person who drives the car at the car robbery, and right? He says, you're still going to be held. Would appear that the earlier generations had a much greater HaKadosh Baruch Hu awareness. They had a greater sense of the omnipresent and everywhere presence of the Rabbona Shalolim, and they lived to that higher standard. We unfortunately are in Golus, continue to be in Golus, and we know, and the Chafetz Chaim says, that in our day and age, it is so hard to do mitzvahs, our schar is so much greater. But I think if we step back and we think about the greatness of the previous generations, we realize from where Klal Yisrael came. And I remember one of the Rabbanim said, I can't even imagine the holiness of the people in the desert, of the Tanoim. But he says, but I'll tell you even more. He says, I can't even reach the level of my great-grandmother who I knew. He said, that's what happens as Golus goes on. Okay.